This is Dr. Tar.
This is Professor Feather.
This is not the Midnight Gadfly. This is Dr. Head. The Gadfly is in the used rubber room this week. But together, you are experiencing...
In Technicolor.
Oh, fellow inmates, we have a very fine movie to talk about this time around. This is one of my favorite movies, actually. I've watched it many times, and I've analyzed it and studied it and read a lot about it because I think it's one of the better horror movies going that's ever been made. I really feel that way. This movie, yeah, might as well talk about what movie we're talking about. We're talking about 1999's The Ninth Gate, directed by the infamous Roman Polanski, stars Johnny Depp, Frank Langella, Lena Olin, yeah. And yeah. That other, Emmanuel Senior, who plays a very interesting part, yes. And we'll get into that. This is, before I even get going, the story I would like, or the one other thing I'd like to mention, and I didn't really do a deep dive, I could have, but I didn't. I think I read his name once somewhere, but it's weird. I can't remember. The cinematographer. Anyway, I think the cinematography of this movie is just absolutely beautiful and brilliant. I just want to say that. So anyway, this is the story about a relatively unscrupulous rare book dealer who does some... At first, you figure it out right from the beginning because he's looking at a collection, and he picks some books out of this collection that he picks up for pretty much a song, and he's really good at the unscrupulousness because he really goes for their greed. And he's very good at it. He shows them what they have, what they could possibly get from it. But then he takes a couple of the choice things and pays next to nothing for them. And he goes back to a bookstore, rare bookstore, run by, what's his name? John Russo was the actor. I'm trying to remember his name in the film. I've always seen this movie 5-6 times. Anyway, he goes back and, you know, puts them there. He gets a call from a guy named Boris Balkin, who's played by Frank Langella. And Boris is obviously a mega fuck rich guy. This guy's, you know, got the bucks. He's really into the occult. And he calls Dean Corso, which is Johnny Depp. He calls Dean to his place and shows him his occult library. And this is a huge glass encased room.
Hermetically sealed.
Hermetically
temperature
sealed.
Temperature controlled. Environment controlled.
Yeah. And, you know, Johnny Depp's definitely in all. But anyway, he says, look, I have this book and I got it from this guy. Oh, the movie starts with a guy writing a note. This looks like another obviously rich guy because he's in this really nice library.
Chateau.
And he goes and hangs himself, dies. His name is Telfer. And Balkin says, I have this book, and the book is called, what is it called? I got it written down because I can't remember the name. Oh, Nine Gates of the Kingdom of Shadows. And he says, I have a copy. There are two other copies out there that I know, that we know exists. He says, what I want you to do is go find these other copies for me. There's the basic plot to the movie. Sounds simple enough, obviously it's directed by Roman Polanski. The writing, it was based on a book too called The Dumas Gate, I think, which apparently is a really good book. I'd never read it. And also incidentally, the whole story is based around these pictures, these illustrations inside of the book.
Engravings, yes.
Engravings. There's nine of them. Duh. Makes sense. There's nine of them. And so this puts, he is put on the trail of these other two books. And so he has to go to Europe to get these books, which, by the way, since Roman Polanski directed this.
How convenient.
If you don't know, if you've lived in a shell, he's persona non grata in the United States. He can't set foot in the United States or he'll be arrested. So the whole film was shot in Europe. And so Corso has to go to Europe to find the books, and he starts out and doing it. The other thing I would like to say about the illustrations in the book, the engravings, they were originally commissioned by the author of the book. What was his? I had his name written down, too, because it's kind of weird. Maybe I did.
Lewis Cipher.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Oh, the Club Dumas was written by Arturo Perez Riverte, and he commissioned the engravings to be drawn. So they are from kind of from the book, except for the final engraving, which Polanski had revised so that the woman sitting on the
looks more like the
green eyes, the girl.
Yes.
So on the way, Johnny Depp.
I'll bring that up later. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. Johnny Depp runs into this enigmatic person, this female, and she doesn't really have a voice, except one time he calls her green eyes because she has the most perfect green eyes I've ever seen. And so you can kind of call her green eyes. But she never really has any other name. And she's a very pivotal character to the movie. And so I'm trying to think if there's anything I really want to say right now. I think I'm going to throw it over you, Dr. Head, just to get your impressions and what your initial thoughts.
I love this movie. I saw it. I remember seeing it on video when it came out. I was working at a video store. And one of the many perks of working in a video store is free movies. That's really the main reason why I was working there. But I saw this movie. I absolutely loved it. And I agree with the cinematography. The look of the movie, it's sumptuous. The colors are rich in like all these tones of like the mahoganies and these leather-bound editions. These books, the libraries are like luxurious. The way they're lit. And I can almost like smell the paper, like or the vellum in which they're written on. There's a look and a feel to this movie that I absolutely love. But it like drips with this like sumptuous sensuality.
It's moist.
Yes, it is moist. I will say if you haven't seen the movie, I'm going to spoil it here. But it's been 25 years. You probably have seen it. If not, my first time through. Movie, I hated the end. I was so fucking angry. Like, wait a minute. I've been waiting for this moment, this revelation. Give me the goods of the ninth gate. But then I realized, this is about the journey.
Equal.
No, it's about the journey.
It's about the journey, not.
Although,
and
yeah.
Then I had to say, okay, then I know I can forego my disappointment and just appreciate how I got there, and the journey is delirious. I love it. It is the mystery is there. Yeah. Like when you find the reason why he's comparing these, there's a sense of threat and danger that's pervasive. I do love that enigmatic figure. She's stunning. I love that she's kind of protecting him, in a way.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'll hand it over to Dr. Tarr.
I really enjoyed it. I like how it set it. I like the mystery, how it changes from like a like a standard, kind of
detective
heist
story,
mystery,
actually,
detective story
right.
That kind of morphs into a supernatural element. And then, him initially when he meets, what's his name? The guy that hires him,
Balkan,
when he walks in on his lecture. And
the girls
off
there.
A rich guy. Well, yeah. And then he goes off into that little subsection about the familiars, assisting people through a supernatural enlightenment, I guess. But anyway,
there's a key word. That's a right
very,
there.
Yeah, yes, very.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, very a poignant, you know, key, you know. But anyway, yeah, I really like the movie. You're right. I liked all that stuff. There's only one part that I do not like, and I think they didn't need it at all. Can I say this or not? Should I save it? You want me to save it?
What?
Well, the fight when he was like when that guy came down and was like trying to take his satchel that had the book in it, you know, knocked him out, you know, beating him up, and then all of a sudden they do that quick shot of her doing like the kung fu wire work down.
Yeah, down the steps.
That I did not like. They didn't need that. I mean, there was already. They were,
I disagree.
I like the heat. I did not like that because it was too much. Because they suggest that what she is, she's supernatural. I get that.
Yeah. That
and then
shows
they bring it up again when her eyes kind of like glow a little bit.
Yeah,
I think they should have just did that. I wish they just would have left it like that. That was supposed to show them
That was the first. No, that was the first indication that she has something more than just
right. And I didn't
and,
like
and
that.
I like that. Because from that point on, you don't have any question. I think they did that on purpose to say, right. Look, that's not part of the story. You need to know that she is something outside of the norm. And that shows right there is absolute clearly that she's.
I like the mystery of it because there's a suggestion maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
But I just think that they decided that wasn't part of the mystery. The mystery is
that was
what
their
she
decision.
Is
they
and what is she going to do? You know, how is she involved?
Yeah.
So they
wanted to redirect your attention.
I would have just liked her
just more about the
popped up.
Yeah. And why is she helping him?
And why and all that.
Yeah.
That's the
I mean, they
mystery.
Were they were bringing it. Yeah, they were
to know
a
that
bunch
she
of clues beforehand to tell you. Yeah,
it was, well, I like. Well,
I like mean, how it
right.
does.
And
I
I'm
like
just saying that only part. That's my only beef about it was that wire work fly down. I didn't like that.
First time I watched it, I liked that moment because I said, "Oh, now I know." I know what she is. Now let's see what happens.
Right.
You know?
I didn't think it was necessary because I agree with you, Dr. Tarr. It's not. I didn't hate it. I don't think it's necessary because by then I've already seen her. I know what she is. Like, oh, I get what you're going at, and that's great.
Well, I think I thought,
but with the eye color, especially the eye color, you know, when she changes her eyes and they glow.
I
and
think
stuff,
that's like, all they need. That subtle.
Yeah, that was enough to show the.
You think
the
so?
Flash.
Yeah, I thought that was just
because they
a
were
really
already
good
hinting at it, and she was already doing some weird stuff.
Right, her interactions are very you
everything,
know,
but well, except
but it's,
for the,
but it's perfect for who she is, and
exactly,
and so, it's perfect for what it is. It's
yeah,
that's all the psychology.
But anyway,
the
let's move on.
Bother
let's
me.
Move on. Let's
yeah,
move on.
But I
because
yeah,
that's
but,
that's a minor point.
It is. One thing I will say before we move on is that I love the way the movie glamorizes smoking, like the sexual. It is a sexual
it's
thing. It is so sensual, and like the cigarettes. I'm like, you know, I want to smoke when I watch this movie. I want to like, oh, I want a fucking cigarette. I don't even smoke cigarettes, but they look sexy, like beautiful, like oh, there's a sensuality to them that they
Johnny
connect.
Depp
along
does
with
smoke
the books,
a good cigarette.
It's like all these like the sensual things like the books with the leather, the way they got a smell and taste that they'll
touch to smell.
I'm looking through this like book that like I know they wrote this book for this movie, but God, it looks like it's a 500-year-old book. You know, I mean, it's this beautiful attention to the important things. And I wanted to get my hands on all those books, you know. Anyway, I'm jumping ahead. Sorry.
That's okay. You know, talking about just Johnny Depp and smoking, did you're talking about the sensual did you ever notice every time he puts a cigarette in his mouth what he does? Takes a cigarette, goes
oh, okay.
Kind of licks it and puts it in your mouth. He wets it.
Okay.
Every time. That's because Johnny Depp is a great actor. So
yes.
He has those
and he smokes
things
a lot. No,
and he does really smoke a lot. Yes.
Yeah. True. Nice to see someone enjoying it because, you know, they just kind of outlawed it for so long and you can't see it on TV or movies anymore. If someone's smoking, it gets an R rating automatically. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it was just nice to see that. You know,
yeah, like, and it was
yeah,
ubiquitous.
And I have to separate the person from the art as far as Polanski goes.
Well, exactly. You know? That's
and
that's
and I'm
you know,
and I'm okay
try
with doing that. Yeah. I'm okay with doing that. But you know, but I'm not a crazy fan of his stuff. I think Rosemary's Baby is way overrated, but this. Really? I do. Maybe because by the time I saw it, I'd seen other things, and I didn't.
I'm sure
I wasn't
is,
in the zeitgeist.
It was so groundbreaking.
Had to do a lot with it. But, you know, I get that. I mean, I like the way it's shot, and I think Mia Farrow looks fantastic. But it just took so long to get there. It could have been better as a Night Gallery episode for me, you know. But yeah. That's just me. Yeah.
I saw it in a theater. Betty
Best
and I
William
saw
Castle
it in a theory,
movie you ever saw.
And I mean, I was just blown away by it, you know. And that makes a big difference to see it in a big theater. And mm-hmm. and at the time, you know, there was not like a lot. You know, of big name movies that have that kind of thing. And I had also read the book too, so
yeah.
I really.
I get
and this was
props
pre-Exorcist
looks,
stuff,
it's
so the whole
it's a well
devil
done
stuff.
Movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I think it's because I had seen so many other things that were probably similar before seeing this movie that like, yes. Oh, I've seen this, you know, and this may have been where it all came from. Like, I remember the one, was it The Seventh Victim?
Yeah.
From like 1945 or 47 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Where they stumble on a devil cult.
Yeah, early black magic in New York City. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, which I think is also a really, really a good movie.
But, yeah, I do too.
But anyway, there's a beautiful.
Kind of relates to,
to this movie.
You know, the Ninth
it's
Gate.
It's interesting. There's 30 years between Rosemary's Baby and The Ninth Gate, and both with that kind of that theme, you know?
Yeah.
And Polanski even says, I really don't adhere to the occult. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's stupid. He says, but it makes for really interesting storytelling.
Yeah.
And he's right. And he's right. And it does.
Always
but anyway,
has.
to move on with the movie, we're getting off track into, you know, Polanski, which, yeah, there's that's just a whole nother story.
Hornansky.
But anyway, so he starts tracking down these other books with the green-eyed woman following him and kind of helping. And if you go back, we'll just go back and start talking about the progression, because he is constantly looking at the book. And the book was...
Comparing and everything.
And when he first gets to the first book, the second book... he sees, and this is what, was that in Italy, was it? The second book was in Italy, and then the third.
The signatures?
And then,
illustrator.
Because he starts finding out that the book was supposedly written by Aristide Torquia. Which is also, this is a good little, you know, payment. Probably nobody noticed, a lot of people did, but not everybody. It was published in 1666.
Well, when did the movie come out? 1999.
But it was published in 1666. Yes. 666.
Yes.
You know, the name of the beast.
Yes.
Number
well,
the
nine
beast.
Is also an important number.
And nine is an important number
as well.
Nine.
Yes. So I thought,
it is.
I didn't think it was a coincidence. Like, oh, 1999? Oh, the ninth gate? Oh, yep.
But yeah, well, we can, I mean, we could do a whole show just on the nine illustrations, you know, because they're the symbol of a journey, a journey of enlightenment or spiritual growth, kind of in a sense.
And that's what I enjoyed.
And the traveler is Corso. He's the person who's on the true path of enlightenment. And as he goes along, you find out that he's more and more obsessed with this. But then he finds, I'll go back. In the second book, the one he's comparing the first book to, he starts seeing that there are differences. And the differences are who has signed some of the engravings. Most of them are signed, his name, what, T.A. is it? Or T.F.?
T.A.F. And then what's the other one?
LCF.
LCF for Lucifer. So he's finding out that some of them
and
were
these tiny little print blocks that were.
Yeah. So, yeah. Was it? Yeah. AT, because his name is Aristide Torquia. So they were AT or LCF. And he's finding that there's these discrepancies. He's also finding that there are discrepancies in some of the pictures. And just the symbolism. And if you notice, except for the first one, all the rest of the pictures are pretty much representations in a form of the tarot.
Yes.
They're all tarot.
I'm sure, they're designed to look that way.
Yeah, that hangman and yes, right.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was all the pictures are absolutely fantastic. Wonderful. What they represent, what each picture represents.
Well, no, I like how they
is just
fit
so
what
fantastic.
They were talking about. They look like they were from the period.
Yes,
I think that was. I enjoy that when they keep it.
I want that book.
Well, that's why I said you know, the book that what's his name Reverte wrote, you know, Perez Reverte. He commissioned those engravings. He had them drawn,
authentically made, like
he had them drawn
like that. Yeah.
For the inclusion into his book.
Into his book.
Oh,
yes.
I see.
That's very
and
cool.
Then, so Polanski used them, except for that. Like I said, the final one.
Okay.
He just wanted
he
her
made it,
okay.
make her look, make the woman in the picture look like.
See,
the,
yeah,
the
now
green
I
eye.
Like that. That would have been to me. That would have been
that's fascinating.
You know, instead of the showing exactly what she is, that would have been.
That'd have been the way to
I
do
think,
it.
Kinda,
simply just
yeah,
kind of pull
I,
out on that last page. At
yeah,
the very
Val
end.
Luton type thing, you know, at the very end, you know, it looks like her.
Well, yeah, but there again, we can
I know,
go back
it's
into
taste. I
we
know.
Can go back into the, you know, what the point of the movie is.
And her yeah, and her purpose well, in it.
And
as
her
a
purpose. That. And that's right. not part of the movie. Her
right.
she's
he
not
him.
Really part of the mystery.
Yeah.
She's so well, you'd learn early on that she's not part of the mystery. She is just a part of the enlightenment of the story moving on. We don't right. even know what she is.
She's a familiar. Yeah.
We don't
yeah.
you don't know that. You don't know what she is. You are never
they
told,
set it up. Yeah.
No. But you
at the
never
beginning,
told,
listen to his lecture and then
what
then
does
she
it matter?
Pops up.
She okay. could also she also represents the whore of Babylon. She also represents
I just
you know,
figured she was a hot yeah. demon.
A succubus.
A
demon.
That's what I'm saying.
She could be a demon.
She is a demon.
She could be the keeper of the gate.
Yeah.
You know?
She could be all the above.
That
is just,
right. Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
And I'm saying,
what exactly yeah. what she is. Mm-hmm. It's not left up in the air that she is supernatural. That's, you know, and that's
right.
not part of the mystery. The mystery, the mystery just, is what happens from of his journey.
Right. Corso's journey.
Yeah, of right. Corso's journey
and
how,
I like
how he the, how he becomes enlightened throughout the whole thing.
You're right.
Right.
I get that.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's just a yeah. minor thing.
Yeah.
But if it's
like
so minor, why are you talking about it so much?
I like the familiar thing, though. I do like the idea that, yeah, I like how they introduce her. She just pops up. She's there. She's like a Men in Black.
Well, yeah, he's in the library. He pulls the book out, sees her on the other side, walks around, she's gone.
She's not there, yeah.
In the car.
She's, yeah, and
later
she's
on,
always
she's in the car,
the
he goes out, she comes back. There's a note. I mean, all that.
And even at the end when she leaves, yeah.
But that's not mystery. That's just her character. That's not a mystery.
No,
that's what
I get
that's,
that.
Yeah.
But
it's like
and
nice,
I like it. I,
it's
no,
like,
it's
like a, it's like part of the misdirection. I think it's part of it, like, it, well, not a misdirection as much as
and
saying there are,
the
there are several things going on at the same time. And then You are definitely right. pulled onto the mystery. I love the main mystery part. I love finding out the differences in these pictures.
Yes.
And what
he has to travel to
are.
These places to find them. And
yeah, and I love seeing
these
libraries
these
and,
we're not...
hearing, yeah, yeah, and how they're displayed. You know, and I'm thinking, if these are not, if they had to make these real books, like if they were all like made for the movie, and they may very well have been, I wanted to find out who the bookmaker was. And saying, I want a replica of this. Can you do this for me? Because it was just stunning the way these books
and they kind of, you know, they kind of make a statement on the elite too, you know, catering to Lucifer's, you know.
Well, and that gets into toward the end when they
yeah.
find, what's her name?
Well, just his enshrinement
of
all these.
Has the occult gathering and. It's
the bastard sect or whatever
it's
it is.
It's all for show. It has nothing to, they're not, really not mm-hmm. trying to do anything. It's mostly about, like, the one, I love the one old lady, the Baroness, when he's talking to her. Yeah, I'm too old for the orgies now.
Orgies.
Yes.
That's what it's all about, you know? His encounter with her, initially, when she comes to his apartment, not initially, but when she comes to his apartment, you know, they have, you know, sex, big time. You know,
and then she has that little.
And then she says, "Where's the
cheek?
Book?" And she attacks him. Yeah.
Yeah.
She has a little more, silver serpent tattoo, which was sexy, by the way.
But they, so, you know, I mean, yeah, the movie is definitely like very, very layered. And, you know, that's the beauty of it. That's why you can watch this movie over and over and get more out of it pretty much every time you watch it, you know. But he moves through. And the other thing we haven't mentioned is that actual deaths start occurring. The first one being the man who owns the rare bookstore, who is hung like the picture.
He's suspended.
And the other thing too that's kind of funny, as we move along, you'll find out at the end, because Balkan is behind practically everything, and he's obviously one that's killing everybody, because that he dies, then the guy with the second book dies. And who else dies? Those two die.
This is kind of out of order, but when he goes back to visit the bookstore, and then the twins are gone, or brothers, or whoever.
Sydney brothers.
Is it a suggestion? Were they?
No, there was no.
Were they supernatural type? Were they there? No one seems to recall.
They never said. Because the two guys that are tearing the place apart.
Right.
Never by the way, one guy played the two brothers.
Right.
That was one guy.
Yeah.
He also played the two movers. The two.
That's so cool. That's
brilliant cool. Because they don't look alike. You know, it's just the way. Great.
So it could have been. This could actually be a supernatural element to it too.
And it's never like it's the bookstore
never
really
existed. Or
I
like that. Yeah, I like that feeling or like that suggestion.
Yeah, whatever happened to him. Yeah. And then to find out that. Well, yeah. I mean, what else? I mean, yeah, because he keeps going and has all these encounters. He has these encounters with the black albino. That's what you talked about, that first encounter down by the river. The black albino, and he's the henchman of what's her name?
I can't
Telfer.
That's
Liana. Liana Telfer. He's her bodyguard, henchman, whatever you want to call
lover
it. Because you know she wants that book. She wants all three of the books. Well, then the second book is halfway burnt.
Yeah.
When he goes back, and there's another one of those, you know, the supernatural. She says, "Yeah, we got to go back there," and she doesn't say why, but somehow she knows.
She guides
you. And yeah, she that's it, because that's what she is. She's kind of
the familiar,
kind of a guide, you know, to lead him, you know, or to help him, you know. Not necessarily. She doesn't really lead him in a lot of ways. She helps.
No, but Lucifer doesn't do that either.
There's theories that she's Lucifer. That she is Lucifer, putting him on the road of enlightenment.
Just push
that
it. Nudge
it. I could go with that. I could totally go with that.
Yeah.
No, I like the actress that they have playing her.
Yeah, she's really good.
And I love the way she looks. She has that. It's normal, but it does have that slightly different look. I really like the way she looks. It's very, yes. She's very pretty.
When it's most powerful for her is at the end when she and Corso are having sex.
Yeah,
and they're showing the close-ups of her face.
Her, yes.
Oh my God, man! You know, her face goes through
ecstasy,
so many
evil.
It's really good.
She pulled it.
Yeah, because it's scary. There's horror. Did. It's sexual. It's also horror. Right. Yeah, to see that because it's like
the devil rides out.
But he keeps his journey through the you know, the whole story is, you know, following the engravings, you know, the nine engravings.
Right.
Also, in each of those engravings, if you notice, and this is obvious, but I'll we'll say it. There's a door in every one of them, because each of the engraving represents one of the doors.
I like how they brought up the three books, and he kind of decided, and he discovered they're a combination, so it's not, you know, like you it became three, it became nine. Yeah, you know, times, yeah. Yeah, anyway.
And three times three is nine. That's
yeah.
all.
And then, then all the misillustrations kind of blend together to give you your key. Like I said, the mystery.
I don't know how much more we want to really talk about it. I mean, we could go into it because he's led, or he ends up at the Telfer, I guess it's the Telfer Mansion or some chateau, where they're having their occult meeting, all wearing the typical black robes and tons of
naked.
You know, it's the perfect, you know, picture of what everybody in the world thinks of an occult
stereotypical
meeting.
Because
it is not a true occult meeting. It's, you know, it's just an affectation of, you know, people wanting to think that they're cool, you know. And giving them an excuse to have orgies. That's what the one bear is.
College.
College is kind of...
Hail Satan!
That's kind of an occult organization.
But
He gets to that, and they have, you know... He dresses up. First... She catches them and gets his book. Right up in the upstairs.
Oh yeah.
And the albino is going to kick
him down
to the basement,
kill him
to kill him. And he Corso foils that, throws the guy over his shoulder because he's walking behind him, and the guy falls down. Then he just beats the shit out of him. There's another look from the green eyes. While he's beating
the
shit out of her, she
just
kind of... And he said, I didn't know you had it in you.
That's a moist situation.
I thought that was good. But then he dons the robe and goes up and stands kind of at the back. And as he's watching, she's up there, you know, and they're doing the performance. All of a sudden, here comes Balkan. Just plowing through.
Storming through the crowd.
He moves with such a
throws
authority.
Throws him to his side.
He just pushes
him
aside. Because you find out they're nothing but wimps. You know, there's no power in these people at all.
We're here for the pussy.
Yeah. And he goes up, you know, and takes the book, and then, you know, she fights him. He knocks her down and starts strangling her.
No restraint about being a woman, though.
Corso decides he's going to stop it, but the green eye girl stops Corso, says no, you know, pulls him back, and lets Balkan strangle Telfer with that necklace,
the little pentagram necklace.
Pentagram.
Did you notice when he's like pulling it, it's stuck this way? Did you see that?
I didn't notice that.
It's going like platinum, it's sticking in her.
That's funny. I really never noticed that. Out of all the times I watched it, I missed that. But and so she stops him from preventing Balkan from killing Telfer, and she says, you know, it wasn't meant to be. You know, this was, you know, meant to be. You know, because it's all following the enlightenment. You know, because then he follows Balkan to the castle that has the three tourists instead of four. Like, that's one of the differences in some of the pictures, in one of the pictures. And he follows him there to see what, you know, what he's going to do. And I guess we've spoiled everything else.
It doesn't matter. You know, how old is this? Yeah,
25 years old, 26.
Yeah. So he gets up there and he's watching, and Balkan goes through this whole speech. And I was going to write it down, and I didn't. That he says, this is the interpretation of the card, of the illustrations. And then they get into an altercation, and the floor crashes through.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And Corso gets stuck in the
stuck
floor
between the planks between, of the floor,
and so. He becomes the perfect captive audience for Balkan's diatribe, you know. And he goes through this whole litany of what each card, or I say card, I meant each engraving pages, means and everything. Page. And then he sets a ring of fire with gasoline, and he lights it, and he's going, oh, I feel so good, I'm perfect. He drank something, too. And
right.
Was that blood, or it looked thick?
I think it was something like that, yes.
Yeah, some kind of
I'm sure it was blood.
Drug, because he started acting like he was, you know, drugged out.
Fermented blood.
But he keeps saying, you know, oh, I feel nothing. I feel great. Yeah, this is great. And he runs his hand through the fire. I don't even feel it. You know, and he's going like this. Anybody can do that. If you run your hand fast enough, you don't feel hardly anything, you know. And Corso's sitting there looking at him going, oh, what the hell? So he gets up and he goes, yeah, I don't feel anything. So the ultimate, so he grabs the gas can, pours it over his head, lights himself on fire. I feel nothing. I feel nothing. This is great. I'm immortal. I'm invincible. Blah, blah, blah.
This hurts.
It's a fantastic death.
Yeah. And so Corso wiggles himself out, falls down into the next place, which luckily isn't very deep, and, you know, lands
how
on the
convenient.
Floor, climbs up the convenient stairs right there, which I thought was good.
How convenient.
How convenient. And gets up and has that, you know, he had that gun.
Who did that? The devil.
Yeah.
Did the devil make those stairs?
Yes, that's right.
It's all
part of
the devil designed it.
It's all part of the plan. Yeah. And he pulls the gun and puts Balkan out of his misery. And then, you know, the place is on fire. He goes outside. And this was curious.
And it has sex.
When he goes outside and you see that one turret on the right-hand side starts burning, little places. I thought, are there going to be 9 burns? There aren't. There's only 7. So I thought, you could have put 2.
Because the other 2 were burning on the ground there, grinding one out.
Yeah. So, and she says to him, you know, she says, no, you know, he was wrong. You know, there's something else. And so she leads him, yeah, you know, they have, you know, sex. And then she leads him back to go back to the Signy Brothers place while the movers are in there.
Doesn't seem to exist anymore. Yeah.
And you know, he asks what happens. They said, we are, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so they had that big, boy, that was a huge bookcase, you know, and they're tipping it over. And it's funny because when you look at the top, it's so dusty, you don't see that.
No, that was pretty good.
That illustration, kinda, you don't even see it. Until it gets halfway over, and then it slides
off. I thought it was going to be something behind that.
Me too, me too. Yeah, that surprised me the first time I saw it. I went, oh, wait a minute. You know,
but that was cool, though. It was just, oh, we'll just put it up here.
No explanation exactly.
But see, that's another supernatural thing. Maybe it was just there when they got there. You know?
Could be too.
Well, I've been here for a long time. All that dust covered it.
All that dust.
It had been there for quite a while.
You know, maybe, yeah.
And we are talking Europe, so I mean, these houses, that thing could
and
have been 200 years old, you know, 500 years old.
Right.
You never know.
Right.
But he takes it and, then he goes back to that castle, the three tower castle, and the door opens and this brilliant light shines out and he walks into it and the movie is over.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like the ending, like Mark said, or Dr. Head said.
That's kind of interesting. You can take that in so many ways. You know,
I felt like I had been on that journey. And like, I want the payoff, too. Like, edge me all this way and then leave me and ruin my orgasm.
Well,
you know,
he's telling you, you know, I'll take you up here, but I have no idea what's on the other side.
Well, to me, there again, you know, because I was different when I first saw it the first time. I loved the ending because I didn't care because I had figured out from the beginning or early on that it was about the journey, mm-hmm. you know, about his journey, and not the end of the journey. Really, was not the
right.
purpose. The purpose was him actually going on a journey and how it was foretold in the pictures. How this all was like. Almost preordained.
But she's a
to a degree. There is one thing that I noticed, and I did read this. This was not my own conclusion. I read this. In the one picture early on, where the the weird Cupid with the mustache, had the arrows, had an arrow pointed down. In the thing, there were two other arrows, and they said those represented. This is this person's opinion. That those represented that there were two possible outcomes. You know, he could actually fulfill the journey, or he would get wasted somewhere along the line.
That would make sense, though, to me.
And it would have to get picked up again at some other point, you know, which I thought was kind of interesting. I read this article, and this article is brilliant. I'll find the website, the link, and I'll put it up. I'll put it in the notes, and I'll send it to you guys, because reading about all of those this woman goes, and she's an occult studier, but she's a scholar and stuff. She analyzes all of those, and it's brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. And when you go back and watch the movie again, you pick up a lot of that, and you see.
Yeah.
I don't agree with everything she says, and she says, this is my interpretation. This isn't, you know.
That's all they can do,
I think that's so great. But it's so well thought out, and so, you know.
Speaking of that kind of stuff, do you see those articles where, like, in Notre Dame and, you know, and Gothic architecture and stuff, you know, the sculptors, when they were way up there, they would put their own kind of, the sculptors would put their own kind of graffiti up there, you know, of like them taking a shit in a bowl, or, you know, these were like on cathedrals and stuff. These guys, you know, they had to go up there and put and sculpt this shit or whatever they did. They would just put this stuff up there. I think that's just funny. And yeah, and then people could hide imagery, you know, just the whole idea of hiding, you know, you could your own
subversion.
Yes. Yeah, within a right. structure that's revered anyway, and it's just
like the plot for Rogue One.
The plot for what?
Star Wars Rogue One or Rogue
oh.
One.
Oh.
Yeah, this revered structure.
It did have a plot.
Oh, it did. Yes.
Okay. Have you never seen That's it? Good to know. That's good. To
it's
know.
It's actually a fantastic movie. It really is. Hmm. Yeah, okay. I know it's not the Star Wars movie you might think. It's like the least Star Wars like of the Star Wars.
Is it?
Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
So maybe that would be good.
Yeah. I might have to watch it just.
You know, I would give it a chance. My first review. I know we're getting way off.
Is this the one that's kind of like about?
I hated it the first time I saw it. I'm like, oh my god, what was this? But then I watched it again. I'm like, okay, I'm seeing something here I didn't see before. And long story short, it is now probably one of my favorites of the Star Wars. Maybe the best of the series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. In a lot of ways.
Is this a Han Solo type thing?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah, don't say anything more about
it. I won't say
anything more about it.
I won't say anything more about it. Back to the Ninth Gate. Yeah, some of us were disappointed without it, but I appreciate the journey. And now I just watch it because it's a beautiful movie. I love the look of it. I want the tactile things are so intense, you know, with the smoking and the books and everything. And it's essential.
Extreme attention to detail is just incredible. There again, now give that credit to Polanski. He's good at that. And he's also good at, I like directors that aren't just so beat you over the head, obvious with everything. And he's really good at subtleties and, you know, I think those kind of films, like this one especially, you know, and Rosemary's Baby. I've watched Rosemary's Baby many times. You seem to find stuff, or you, because you're watching it another time, you know certain things, to look for other things,
cues of what's happening,
or any kind of you know,
which
ties.
I love that. I love that idea. Yeah. It's so layered that you have to look.
Yeah,
I base our whole Tar and Feather thing on that.
Yeah,
you got to watch us again to get us.
Yeah, they're so layered.
I think that should be our new tagline. Watch us a couple of times and get us.
But this movie, I mean, we've all said it's just a pretty fantastic movie. I'm really sorry that Gadfly couldn't be here today because I was real curious to, and I know he likes it, but I would like to hear some of his opinions too, you know?
Oh, yeah, yes.
But because I think he and I have talked about the movie before. We might have even sat down and watched it once on HBO.
Throw out a good look to random.
Years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows, yeah. But yeah, excellent, excellent, excellent movie. Anything anybody else want to say about this movie before we take off?
It's a fun movie. Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, which...
You have really now. Have.
Which would be a good double feature with Curse of the Demon. With
and
Dana
I'll tell
Anderson.
You right now, even if you after if you listen to us and then you go see it, what we've said will actually be kind of helpful in how you can understand the movie and see the movie. And, you know, because there again, the ending is not, it's the journey. And even though we've talked about it, we can't do it justice because it is so visually
terrific,
you know? and it's written so well. I guess it's loosely based on the book, from what I understand. The book has a whole lot, but you know that's the way a lot of books go. It had like two writers plus Polanski helped write the screenplay. There you go, The Ninth Gate by Roman Polanski.
It's a fun watch.
And you have been experiencing
Nine Gates of Radio.
I'm Brad.
I still want a happy ending.
Sorry. Next department.
Oh, unsaneradio.com. Go there. You can listen to every episode we've done so far. We're in the 300s right now.
No, there are episodes.
We've done a few. Unsane Radio is on Facebook. Unsane Radio is on Blue Sky. TarandFeather.com. We have a few movies up there and a few little other tidbits that are kind of interesting.
Tidbits.
We have Tar and Feather Psycho Cinema is on Facebook. And I think that's about it.
Oh, and Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is on the YouTube. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is on the Facebooks. Montag Lewis is on the Instagram. And we got some good stuff coming up. Bad Movie Bukkake, the worst of the worst.
Sounds moist.
That's right. You'll need an extra sock. Bring your own socks.
And Wee Freaks.
I can't do that.
Wee Freaks.
I need synthetic.
Are you done?
No.
Wee Freaks. W E E F R E E K Z. Family friendly comic strip. Not a strip, but what do you call that?
A web comic.
A web comic. It's usually 9-panel, a panel comic.
It's a comic.
Written and illustrated by our good friend John Lufez Boise.
Boing.
It's on the Facebook.
It is on Facebook. Go in. They're just great.
Just explore it.
Yes,
please.
It's delightful. Perfect. It really is. I go back and reread them.
I do too. So do I.
It's just like John sitting there next to you, smiling. You know, Blue Fez just sitting there. Yep. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Midnight Gadfly is bouncing around in the rubber room.
Sorry. He's in recovery now.
He's in recovery.
He pulled his groin for about 20 minutes last night, and I think he's overdone it.
He's been withdrawn from all these B movies that he's like going into convulsions. So, yeah.
That top 100 list took it to him.
Bela Lugosi.
And we're not even done.
That's right. I know, right?
More to come.
He'll toughen up.